There was a little furniture scattered here and there on the thick carpeting, all of it designed within an inch of its life, and just the occasional small painting on the walls. Originals, of course. Clan Chojiro were famed for their minimalist approach. Owen hoped it applied to their interior security systems as well, but he rather doubted it. His and Hazel's entrance had to have set off all kinds of alarms, and since the interior weaponry hadn't finished them off any more than the exterior force shields, the odds were that a large number of heavily armed men were currently on their way up to find out why. Of course, they'd have to start at the bottom and work their way up floor by floor to make sure everything was secure, which should take them some time. More than enough for him to deal with the computers and leave. Theoretically. He drew his disruptor and activated the force shield on his wrist. The oblong of glowing force formed instantly on his arm, its familiar low hum distinctly comforting. Hazel moved in beside him, a gun in each hand.
Tax and tie, that's four floors down, right? Elevator or stairs?
Stairs, of course. The elevators can be overridden by the tower's central computers. Didn't you attend any of the briefings?
I leave all the heavy thinking to you, stud. Just find me something I can shoot at, and I'll be happy.
Owen led the way out of the empty room and onto the stairwell. It was well posted and exactly where it was supposed to be, which cheered Owen up a bit. At least the intelligence report seemed to be accurate. The stairwell was narrow, brightly lit, and looked as though it had last been whitewashed sometime in the previous century. After all, who used stairs anymore except in emergencies? It was all deathly quiet, apart from the racket Owen and Hazel made clattering down the bare steel steps. No doubt the tower defenses were sounding all kinds of alarms, but that would be on the tower's private security channel, and Owen didn't have the time to search out which particular channel they were using that day. No doubt security changed it regularly. He would have. Hazel checked the lock at the bottom of the stairs, a simple combination mechanism, and sniffed disparagingly.
This wouldn't stop a 10-year-old on Mistworld. I'll have it open in a few minutes.
Now, let me try. Owen bent over the lock, studied it carefully, and then entered a short series of numbers. The lock clicked open. Owen straightened up and smiled at Hazel. You got the boost from me. I got breaking and entering from you. Somewhat improved by the maze's changes. Wonder what else we've got that we don't know about.
This is getting spooky. At this rate, we'll end up with more augmentations than a Hayden man.
Now that is a disturbing thought. But it'll have to wait. When I open this door, everyone in the room beyond is a target. We don't have the time to deal with prisoners.
Suits me. I never did like tax collectors.
Owen put his shoulder to the heavy steel door, and it swung open inward with surprising speed. Five technicians looked up, startled, and barely had the time to draw breath to cry out before Hazel picked them all off with separate shots from her projectile weapon. Owen quickly swung the door shut behind them, and everything was quiet in the computer room. He was glad he hadn't had to use his disruptor to back Hazel up. Using an energy weapon in a confined space full of delicate equipment was rarely a good idea. He holstered his gun and leaned over the nearest body to make sure it was dead. He grimaced in spite of himself. Projectile weapons got the job done, but they were extremely messy. There was blood all over the floor, and holes in the bodies big enough to stick his fist into. Disruptors tended to be much neater, and cauterized their own wounds.
Check they're all dead. I don't want any surprises while we're working.
Oh, sure. You have a bash at the machines, and I'll guard your back. What I know about reprogramming computers could be engraved on my left thumbnail.
It shouldn't be that complicated. Owen hopefully studied the terminals before him. Jack Random and the Haydenmen worked out the programming between them. All I have to do is load the disks and let them run. If you'd like to cross your fingers at this point, feel free to do so. He pulled up a chair and sat down before the massive bank of computers that covered the whole wall before him. Together with the machinery scattered throughout the room, these computers were responsible for setting and collecting the many taxes of the entire empire. Trillions of credits came and went at these computers' commands every day. Decisions made here could be questioned by no one lower than the Empress Lionstone herself. That the Church of Christ the Warrior, quite possibly the most paranoid religion of the time, trusted these computers to run its tithing system as well, spoke volumes for the machinery's authority. They distributed the wealth of the empire, with contributions from the lowest to the highest. Even the families paid taxes through their business interests. It took a lot of money to run the Empire and keep Lionstone in the manner to which she'd become accustomed. Everyone trusted the computers implicitly. Of course, they'd never come up against Haydenman technology before. Few had. Owen grinned broadly. The entire financial base of the Empire ran through this room, and he, a despised outlaw, was about to bring it all crashing down in ruins. He entered the necessary codes, removed the package of software disks from his hidden pocket, and slotted them into place. He paused, just to savor the moment, and then hit the final entry key. Nothing obvious happened. The machines hummed on as before. But deep within the database, changes were being made. First, extremely large sums were being diverted from the Empire coffers into previously prepared rebel accounts. Billions of credits, soon to be chasing from one short-lived bolt hole to another, until their provenance was hopelessly lost and confused. It seemed only fair and right to Owen that the Empire should fund its own destruction. And once it had completed that little task, the program would then set about erasing, or at the very least hopelessly scrambling, every scrap of data in the computers. No record would remain of who paid what or when. In short, utter chaos. There was no copy of the records anywhere else, for security reasons. Lionstone believed very firmly in centralization. Having things in one place made them easier to control. And who would ever have thought that the mighty Clan Chojiro's extensive security systems could be defeated by two lowly individuals on gravity sleds, backed by Haydenman technology? So, once the news got out, and it would get out eventually, whatever the Empire did, a great many lesser people would suddenly find they were a great deal better off than they had been, courtesy of the rebellion. The Empire, on the other hand, would not only find itself suddenly short of working funds, it would also have to spend even more credits and man-hours just trying to put together a picture of how badly off they were. It would be years before Lionstone could raise taxes again, and while the Empire was so preoccupied, the rebellion could get on with more serious projects.
How long is this going to take?
Owen looked back at Hazel and shrugged. Beats me. I did ask, but since no one's ever done this before, no one knows for sure. Basically, we just hang around here till the computer spits out the disks, and that should be it. Let's just hope it doesn't take too long. Clan Chojiro's security forces are undoubtedly following standard procedure and working their way up the tower floor by floor even as we speak. They'll stop to secure each floor as they go, but even so, it won't be that long before they come hammering on our door. Hopefully the disks will be finished and the underground representative Stevie Blue will have already made contact with us. Otherwise, we are in deep shit.
I love it when you talk technical.
Hazel stopped and frowned suddenly.
What's the password for Stevie Blue? I can never remember things like that.
Owen paused, frowning. Now I knew it until you asked me. What the hell is it?
Oh, well, it'll come back to me.
And then they both stopped and looked sharply at the closed metal door. They hadn't heard anything yet, but they both sensed something. Another gift from the madness maze. Owen moved quickly over to the door, eased it open a crack, and listened intently. From not all that far away came the sound of massed, booted feet crashing on steel steps, drawing steadily closer. Owen let the door close silently and backed away from it.
Company's coming. Lots of them. Either they're not bothering to secure every floor, the cheats, or there's a hell of a lot more of them than we were led to believe.
I knew this was going too smoothly. Well, let them come. I could use a little exercise.
Not for the first time. You're missing the point. If the security forces are already this close, how is Stevie Blue supposed to make contact with us?
Tricky. I suppose we'll just have to kill all the security people, won't we?
Owen looked at her. You've become altogether too cocky since we survived the maze. We're a lot more than we used to be, but we're not unbeatable.
Speak for yourself, Deathstalker. We're stronger, faster, and sharper than any damn security guards. We can take them. It doesn't matter how many of them there are. You worry too much, Owen.
He shook his head sadly. Cocky, definitely cocky. Unfortunately, since we can't leave here yet, we have no choice but to let them come to us. Try not to get yourself killed, Hazel. I'd hate to have to start training another partner. Hazel glared at him.
First, we are not partners, and second, if there's any training going on here, I'm the one that's doing it. If it weren't for me, you'd have been killed a dozen times over. I'll do the fighting, and you just watch for those discs to reappear. Once they're out, we are gone.
On Stevie Blue?
Can save his own ass. Serves him right for being late.
The sound of approaching feet was very close now. Hazel hefted her two guns and stood facing the closed door. Owen hauled the dead technicians to one side so he and Hazel would have room to maneuver, if they needed it. He got blood on his hands and sleeves, and wiped them thoroughly on the front of his jacket. He didn't want his hands to be slippery if he had to use his sword. Feet crashed on the floor outside, and the door swung inward as three guards put their shoulders to it. They paused a moment in the doorway as they took in Owen and Hazel and the blood on the floor, and that moment was all Owen needed to aim his disruptor and fire. The energy beam blasted a hole right through the first guard's chest and took out the man standing behind him as well. Hazel got the other one, her disruptor beam neatly separating the man's head from his body. And that was when the rest of the guards came crashing in, convinced their opponent's energy weapons would be useless now for the next 2 minutes. Owen and Hazel ducked down behind their personal force shields, and energy beams ricocheted around the room. Various pieces of equipment exploded and burst into flames. The guards put away their exhausted guns and pressed forward with drawn swords. And that was when Hazel lowered her force shield and opened up with her projectile weapon. Explosive bullets tore through the men in the room, ripping them apart and throwing their lifeless bodies aside. Blood flew in the air, and the roar of the gun was deafening in the confined space. The guards could get through the door only a half dozen at a time, and the projectile weapon cut them to shreds while they were still struggling to get into the room. It had been designed that way to make the room easier to defend against mass rebel attacks. The guards had no force shields, too expensive. They relied on numbers. And all too soon, Hazel's gun ran out of bullets and fell silent. Hazel swore briefly and holstered the gun. The guards came crashing in again, and Owen and Hazel went to meet them with cold steel in their hands. Swords rang on swords, but though the guards outnumbered the outlaws a dozen to one, it was still no contest. The guards were already confused and demoralized, with so many of them already dead, and Owen and Hazel both had the boost. Owen's smile stretched into a death's head grin as blood roared in his veins and thundered in his head. His enemies seemed to be moving in slow motion, and he cut them down easily and gloried in their deaths. He'd always been fast when boosting, but the maze had made him inhumanly fast. The guards fell quickly, butchered like so many helpless animals in the slaughterhouse. And then there were no more targets, only unmoving bodies on the bloody floor. Owen checked that the room was empty, apart from him and Hazel and the lifeless bodies, peered out the door into the empty corridor, and then dropped out of boost. He shuddered helplessly as the reaction hit him. For a few fleeting moments, he had been almost a god, and now he was only human again. And it hurt. His muscles ached from the strain he'd put them through, and his movements seemed unbearably slow and sluggish. He breathed deeply, concentrating as he'd been taught, and his senses quickly returned. The Deathstalker family had spent generations perfecting the surge of strength and speed that was Boost, but even so, the human body could stand it only for short periods. It burned up the nervous system with a remorseless appetite, and there was always a price to be paid afterward. And even above that, there was the terrible joy of the Boost, wild and overpowering, more tempting and addictive than any drug could ever be. The Boost, pride and curse of the Deathstalker clan. And Hazel was caught up in it, and burning so very, very brightly. She hacked and cut at the dead bodies before her, laughing breathlessly, her face slick with sweat. Her eyes were wide and feral, fixed on some inner private Valhalla. Owen called to her, but she didn't hear him. He moved toward her, and she spun on him, sword at the ready, her grin terribly eager. He sheathed his sword, switched off his shield, and held out his hands to her, so she could see they were empty. Her head cocked a little to one side as he spoke to her soothingly. He took another step closer, and she lunged forward, her sword flying toward his gut. Owen tapped his boost just for a second, just long enough for him to sidestep so that her sword flashed past him, missing his side by less than an inch. He clamped his arm down hard so that the sword was held in place and hugged Hazel to him. She fought him fiercely, and Owen knew he couldn't hold her for more than a few moments. He held her blazing eyes with his and reached out to her through the mental link they shared. The maze-given connection of the undermind. He couldn't reach her with words or thoughts, only the simple truth of his presence, who and what he was, and how he felt about her. Her mind was bright and dazzling, darting like quicksilver, sharp and deadly. Owen reached out to her, and slowly she responded, calmly, inch by inch. And he felt the first faint stirrings of her own feelings before a barrier slammed down between them as Hazel cut off the link and dropped out of boost. She almost collapsed as her legs shook, and Owen held her trembling body close to him until she had enough strength and control to push him away and stand alone. She took a deep, shuddering breath and nodded to him brusquely. He knew that was the only acknowledgement he'd ever get of what they'd felt and shared for a moment. Hazel's hands were almost steady as she wiped the sweat from her face with the same filthy rag she'd used earlier to clean her sword.
That was something else. I've never felt anything like it. And I've tried a lot of things in my time. I was so alive. I would have killed you if you hadn't stopped me. Is the boost always like that?
Mostly. You never really ever get used to it. That's why I only ever use it when I have to. Take it easy for a few minutes. It takes time for your body to replace the energy the boost burns up.
And you've lived with this most of your life?
Hazel looked at Owen with new respect.
You're a harder man than you look, Deathstalker. I was once a plasma baby, addicted to Wampir blood. And the boost is stronger than any drug I've ever known. How do you stand it?
By using it only when I absolutely have to. And I have had training you haven't. It gets a little easier in time, but not much. I did try to warn you.
Yeah, you did.
Hazel turned away and looked at the dead bodies scattered and piled across the room. The floor was awash with blood, and she shuddered briefly before she was back in control.
You suppose that's all of them?
I very much doubt it. This was just the first wave, sent in to check out the situation. Look at the bodies. They're all wearing short-range sensors. Their superiors know exactly what happened here. Which means not only can we forget about having the advantage of surprise, but we can also expect a heavily armed, much larger second wave. The experienced fighters. Things are about to get really interesting. He broke off, and they both looked at the closed door again. Someone was coming. They could feel it. Owen pulled the door open and stepped out into the corridor, his guns at the ready. Behind him, Hazel was quickly reloading her main projectile weapon. Owen moved slowly toward the stairwell. Someone was coming up the stairs, his unhurried footsteps loud and echoing in the quiet. Hazel moved in beside Owen, nudged him to get his attention, and mouthed, "One man?" Owen shrugged, and they both moved forward to look down the stairs. The newcomer took his time climbing the last flight of stairs, and then came to a halt at the last corner, looking impassively up at Owen and Hazel. He was a tall, blocky man with thick slabs of muscle and a patient, brooding face. His skin was dark, his close-cropped hair was white, and his cold eyes were a startling green. He wore no armor, only a long green kimono of the Chojiro clan, decorated with stylized dragons, and he carried a long, curving sword in each hand. Oh, shit. Hazel looked at him.
You know this guy?
Unfortunately, yes. This is ex-investigator Razor. Used to work for Clan Wolf as their pet killer and intimidator. But given the Wolf's downfall and that extremely tacky dress he's wearing, I can only assume he's taken up a similar position with Clan Chojiro. If you know any good religions, now would be a really good time to start praying.
He doesn't appear to have any guns. Why can't we just shoot him from a safe distance?
One, he undoubtedly has a personal force shield, and two, it might annoy him.
Hazel put away her guns and drew her sword.
So we get our hands dirty.
Hazel, investigators are killing machines, the best there is with any weapon you care to name.
So what do you suggest we do?
Anybody else, I'd suggest surrendering, but investigators don't take prisoners. So we're going to have to fight him. Oh, shit.
Will you stop saying that? He's just one man. I'll take first crack at him.
No, you won't. I will. You still haven't recovered from boosting.
I can take him, really.
Excuse me,
said the investigator. You be quiet. We'll get to you in a minute. Hazel, I am taking first crack, and that's all there is to it.
Since when were you in charge of this mission? If I want to take him, I'll take him.
This is really not a good idea.
Excuse me.
Shut up!
Investigator Razor shrugged and surged up the last few stairs impossibly quickly, his two swords swinging in shimmering blurs. Owen and Hazel stood their ground, swords at the ready, and dropped into boost. Blood pounded in their heads, and strength burned in their arms like living flames. Razor hit them like a thunderstorm, his swords like lightning. The air was full of the ring of steel on steel as Owen and Hazel were driven back, step by step, unable to meet the sheer ferocity of his attack. Razor left the stairwell behind him, moving implacably forward, until Owen and Hazel bumped up against the corridor wall behind them, and there was nowhere else to go. Owen and Hazel separated and attacked him from two sides at once. Razor held his ground and stood them both off, his blades moving too fast to be seen. Owen ducked at the last moment, and a flashing sword cut a groove right into the wall where his head had been. Hazel lunged forward, hoping to catch Razor momentarily off balance, and then had to hurl herself to one side as a waiting sword leaped out to meet her. She hit the floor rolling and was quickly back on her feet, breathing hard. Blood soaked her left sleeve, but she ignored it, cushioned from pain and shock by the boost. Owen had already realized they couldn't beat Razor on their own. The investigator had been trained to the peak of perfection in all the killing arts, and Owen didn't have the expertise to match him. Neither did Hazel. But they did have the boost, and what the maze had done to them. He reached out to Hazel through the mental link, the undermine they didn't have to understand to use, and their minds touched. They threw themselves at Razor, attacking in perfect synchronization, two swords wielded by one concerted will. Razor fell back a step, and then another. But that was as far as he would go. Even joined, Owen and Hazel could only ever be his equal. And there was no saying which way the fight might have gone if Razor's kimono hadn't suddenly burst into roaring flames. He threw himself to one side, rolling on the carpeted floor to try and crush the flames, but they just blazed the brighter. The flames were already licking up around his face as he lurched to his feet and ran off down the corridor, but he never once made a sound. He disappeared around a corner, still burning, and was gone. And all they could hear was the departing echo of his feet. Owen and Hazel dropped out of the boost and the mental link and clung to each other as they waited for the reaction to pass. Hazel's cut on her arm had been messy but minor and was already healing itself. It still took a while for the trembling to stop and their breathing to return to something like normal. When they finally let go of each other and looked around, they found themselves facing three women with the same face, smiling sardonically at them from the top of the stairs. Clowns, Owen thought immediately. Presumably from the underground. They looked tough enough. All three women were wearing battered leathers adorned with brightly polished lengths of steel chain, over t-shirts bearing the legend, Born to Burn. They looked to be in their mid-twenties, but their faces were somehow older, more harshly used. They were all short and stocky, with bare, muscular arms, and their long, dark hair was full of colorful knotted ribbons. There were splashes of color on their faces, too, perhaps to disguise how pretty they might have been if it weren't for their cold eyes and determined mouths.
Can we help you?
Owen did not lower his sword. He had a suspicion he was smelling strongly of sweat, but decided he wouldn't bring it up if they didn't.
The seagulls are flying low tonight,
said the woman in the middle, meaningfully. Owen looked at her, and then turned and looked at Hazel, who looked back at him.
The seagulls are flying low tonight.
Sorry, didn't quite catch that. The seagulls are what?
Hold everything. Seagulls, that was part of the contact phrase, wasn't it?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's gone right out of my head.
If I don't start hearing an answer sometime soon, I'm going to start shooting.
Angels. Something about angels.
Something angels in the moonlight, I think.
Oh, hell, that's close enough. Be here all day otherwise. We're your contact,
said the woman on the left.
Sorry it took us a while to get here, but there are security guards all over the place, and we didn't want to kill them all. It would only have attracted attention.
Fair enough. What happened to Stevie Blue?
We're right here.
Right,
said the one on the right.
All of you?
Got it in one. I'm Stevie One. This is Two and Three. Don't get us mixed up. We're touchy about it.
I take it you're also Espa's. Owen put his sword away. Hazel reluctantly sheathed hers, but kept her hands near her guns. Owen gave the Stevie Blues his best diplomatic smile, and vowed silently to do something really unpleasant to the divot who'd got Stevie Blue's personal details wrong. Nice work on the investigator. I think he was prepared for everything except a sudden flash fire. Next time, feel free to reduce him to a pile of smoldering ashes. All right, let's get down to business. The program's in the machine and running. All we have to do is keep the hostile natives at bay until it's finished, and then we can leg it. We've got a ship coming back to pick us up. It's a Hayden Man ship, but don't let that panic you. They've been very reasonable, so far. The three Stevie Blues smiled in unison.
Anyone annoys us, they're toast. We're pyros, elves, Espa Liberation Front. We kick ass.
And you're the underground's idea of diplomats? You're going to be very popular at strategy planning sessions. I might just start attending them again.
The cyber rats are running interference to keep this tower isolated. No one from outside will know anything's happened till it's all over.
Owen frowned. Computer hackers aren't exactly noted for their reliability.
You can trust these, if only because they know we'll kick their ass if they screw up. Right.
Owen and Hazel suddenly turned away and looked thoughtfully at the stairs. Hazel drew her guns, and Owen turned back to the clones. Visitors are on the way.
You Espers or something?
Something. The investigator must have put himself out and alerted his people. Any minute now, we're going to be hip deep in security guards.
That's not all. They've got an S-blocker with them. I can feel my powers fading as it gets closer.
Wonderful. Can anything else go wrong?
Quite a lot if we just stand around here waiting for them. May I suggest we get the hell back to the computer room?
Too late. They're here.
The three clones drew their swords with the same quick professional motion and moved to block the head of the stairwell. Owen and Hazel moved in beside them, guns at the ready, just in time to see a single tall figure step into sight at the final corner of the stairs below. He was dressed in jet-black robes and battle armor, looked to be in his early 30s, and was handsome in an unspectacular way. His dark eyes and slight smile were utterly cold, and just standing there with empty hands, he looked calm and confident and very dangerous. Stevie, too, whistled softly.
The Lord High Dram his own bad self. We should be honored. He normally only murders Espers from a safe distance. He can't just blast and burn the tower this time. The Empress would have his nuts if he let the tax computers be destroyed.
Owen and Hazel looked at each other thoughtfully. That man is quite definitely dead. I saw the body.
So who's this? A clone? Does anyone at court know? Or was the one we saw die a clone?
Are we supposed to understand any of that?
I'll explain later. Assuming there is a later. For the moment, just believe me when I say things just got a lot more complicated. The Widowmaker will be a major rallying point for the Empire that we hadn't counted on. We have to get this information back to Rebel HQ.
I've got a better idea.
Hazel raised her projectile weapon and let Dram have it point blank. The stairwell echoed to the roar of the gun as bullets hammered into the steel walls over and over. But Dram's cold smile never wavered. His hollow image shimmered slightly, but was otherwise unaffected.
You didn't really think someone of my quality would come in person to deal with rebel trash, did you? The lower floors of this tower are now blocked off and occupied by my troops. There's no way out, and nowhere for you to go. Surrender, and at least you'll live long enough to stand trial.
The Stevie Blues glared at him fiercely. Stevie One spat on the floor.
What makes you think we'd trust treacherous scum like you? You came to us pretending to be a man called Hood, and we trusted you. In return, you betrayed us to the Empire forces. Hundreds of good men and women died that day just because they happened to be Espers or clones. We'll all die before we surrender to you.